Welcome back to the I'm Moving to Italy podcast. This is Nathan Heinrich.
And I'm Vera Sarzano.
And we would like to welcome you back to Season 6, Episode 16. Four regions away, Vera, from making it through all 20 regions.
I can't believe it. 16 regions already. Wow.
We have done pretty well, I would say, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. And we're doing even better today. Because I know we have a very special episode.
We have a very, very special interview. And this guest is thanks to you, isn't it?
She is one of my students who happens to have a house not far from me, actually. The neighboring region of Umbria.
That's right. We're in Umbria today. And we are going to be in Umbria with your wonderful Italian student, Loniel.
Isn't she the best?
She's like one of those people. We have this saying in the United States. I don't know if you've ever heard it or not, but we have this saying and it goes, quiet waters run deep.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she, on the surface, is quiet waters. But when you get below the surface a little bit with her, you find that she is one of the most fascinating, interesting people. But she seems so calm and poised and well put together that you don't really expect how many dimensions she has. I had such a pleasure recording our conversation, and I'm really, really excited to share it with you today.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what you guys talked about. But first, I want to hear you speak Italian.
Oh, but Vera, why do you want to hear me, of all people, speak Italian?
Because you need to learn. And I like to suffer. What can I tell you?
Yeah. Do you have an idiom in Italian for the saying, a glutton for punishment?
No, what's that?
Do you know what the word glutton means?
Is that one of the sins? One of the things you're not supposed to do? Yeah.
Seven deadly sins? Uh-huh, yeah. Gluttony is the sin. A glutton is the person who's doing the sinning.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a glutton for punishment, yeah.
And what does that mean, as an idiom, I mean? Oh, I understand the words. I cannot put them together and make sense.
Oh, a glutton. You know what a glutton is? A glutton is someone who overindulges.
Yeah, indulge.
So if you're overindulging in punishment, it's like you're a masochist, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, we have that word. But no, I never heard glutton for punishment. I like that. So you're stalling and not speaking Italian to me. So what are you...
Oh, man. Okay, let's speak in Italian. And here's what I'm going to talk about. So these last few regions that I've been searching for people to find to interview have been a little bit on the challenging side because these five regions are the regions with the fewest amount of expats living in them. They are also regions that Italians sort of don't consider to be the most desirable regions to live in. I should have done all these regions first, but instead I put them off to the very end. So now I'm having a hard time finding guests for these regions, but I think I finally nailed it all down. So one of the regions that we were supposed to be having an interview yesterday evening, in fact, I had to actually cancel my group Italian class with you because of this particular interview. And I was waiting for the interview, waiting, sitting in front of my computer, and the guest never showed up, never told me anything, never gave me any feedback. And so, yeah, I kind of got stood up, and I was like, okay, well, we don't have anything planned for the rest of the night. Alessandro, let's go do something. Let's go out to dinner. We cook at home a lot, and last night we didn't really have anything figured out for dinner. And so I was like, why don't we go to that restaurant that got changed? It used to be a place that we would go, like a little pub, and it got changed into a Mexican restaurant, which of course I'm very highly skeptical about Mexican restaurants that aren't located in either Mexico or California. So Alessandro was like, yeah, let's go. So we bundled up, went out into the cold, went over to this Mexican restaurant. Before we even got to the restaurant, we could hear music playing because they had Mexican music playing on the outside speakers. And I was like, wow, it looks like there's people. There's people coming out, there's people going in. It looks like there's actually people here. I thought this place would be closed down in a matter of a few months. We walk in, the place is jam-packed. The music was playing, the lighting was perfect, and we actually barely got a table because there's people that were making reservations to come to eat at this restaurant. So the food was Mexican food with an Italian twist. There were some ingredients missing, like limes and cilantro and things like that, but I ordered a Corona beer. I never drink beer, and I ordered a Corona, and we had our tacos and burritos and eggplant meatballs, and it just had an interesting experience at this Mexican restaurant, but it was so fun, and I took some surrounding sounds from that, and I'll share those with you in a future episode, but it's like one of our new favorite places to go now, so I know you're kind of a picky eater, Vera. But maybe sometime when you visit Conegliano, we'll go there and have margaritas and some chips and guacamole or something like that.
Oh, I would love to.
Yeah, so it ended up being a night where my plans sort of fell through, but it ended up being one of those nights where everything turned out perfect. So I was actually kind of grateful that the guest canceled on me. And so hopefully we'll get him back and we'll be able to, I'm sure it was just a scheduling error. It was probably something on my part. I probably miscommunicated or something. But anyway, hopefully we'll get that guest back. And what about you, Vera? Tell me about your evening. What did you guys do yesterday or last night besides this translation project of yours?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I can't do anything but translate right now. I'm spending days and night on my computer working because I don't have time left. Yeah, it's too late now. But in two more days, gonna be all finished, all done with this, hopefully, all finished with this translation because my delivery date is January 15th. And I'll ask Luca to take me out somewhere. Not a Mexican restaurant because I don't think there's any Mexican restaurant near me. But you know what? Now that I think about it, a new restaurant just opened in Siena, and it's a Californian restaurant.
Isn't that okay?
I want to try it. They have brunch there with avocado toast. I want you to try it because I bet you'll find it not Californian at all. And not authentic. I mean, it's people from Tuscany that open it, and it's called, I think, Willie's. Yeah, I don't know.
Let's go sometime.
Yeah, we'll see. But, you know, it's the tradition that we lack. We have no idea what you guys eat in California, so we just try. Like you were saying about Mexican restaurants in Italy that are different and they have this Italian twist. And that's what we think when we see Italian restaurants abroad. We are like, that is not Italian.
Well, it'll be worth a try. And that would be fun anyway to go have brunch at that quote unquote California restaurant, Willie's in Tuscany. In Siena, you said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about it on the podcast. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So obviously we kind of talked way more in English than we are going to do in Italian because we like to talk, right, and to explain. And we are not going to use very difficult words today for our Italian version, but we are going to use two idioms. The first one is dare buca, dare buca. So we use the verb dare, and obviously you conjugate it in past, present tense, him, her, whatever. So to give, and then buca, which is another word for hole, like you dig a hole, right? So dare buca, to give. And that means to stand someone up so you don't show up to an appointment or whatever. The other idiom, it's more of a phrase, and I'm sure you've heard this before. It's avere voglia. So we use the verb avere, to have, and then the word voglia, voglia, which sounds like voglio, I want, and it has the same root, obviously, but it actually means craving something or feeling like doing something. It's not that I want it. It's more than, yeah, I feel like it, you know? It's Yeah, very Italian, very, there's just a lot of feelings and yeah, into it. It's not I want, it's I crave, I desire, I long, I feel like doing something. So let's see if you can hear these two idioms or phrases in our Italian conversation.
Thank you, Vera. Okay, so here is our Italian conversation. Ieri sera dovevo registrare un'intervista per il podcast, ma l'ospite mi ha dato buca. È la seconda volta che mi dà buca, ma non importa. Ieri sera per consolarmi ho chiesto ad Alessandra di andare al ristorante messicano perché avevo voglia di messicano ed è stata una serata perfetta. E tu, Vera, che cosa hai fatto?
Io proprio niente. No, sto lavorando tantissimo a una traduzione e non ho tempo di fare niente. Però ancora 2 giorni e poi anch'io chiederò a Luca di portarmi fuori a cena per festeggiare. Spero solo che non mi dia buca.
Ah, poverina. Well, Vera, I'm so sorry that you're sort of stuck in this momentary misery of this translation job, and I hope that it's over soon so you and Luca can go out and celebrate, because you certainly deserve it. All right, well, let's get back to our episode. And again, we are in the region of Umbria today. Now, Loniel de Haven, what an interesting name that she has. Her family has a very unique situation. I don't want to give too much of this away because we're going to discover this in our conversation today, but they are not actually living in Italy full time, but they just recently purchased a home in Umbria. So a part of their heart now belongs to this beautiful region in the center of Italy, Umbria. And it's one of my personal favorite regions. Isn't it considered the green heart of Italy, Vera?
Yes, it is. It's very green, a lot of forests and trees, and it's beautiful.
How would you say that in Italian?
Il cuore verde dell'Italia.
Okay, got it. Well, Loniel has a very, very interesting perspective, and I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get right into our conversation today. So here is my conversation with Loniel de Haven in California, but talking a lot about Umbria today. So enjoy. Welcome, Loniel. So great having you here today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm looking at your screen and I see that in the room that you're sitting in, there's a whole lot of sunlight coming in, while behind me, it's total darkness in my office here because I'm talking to you from where?
In California, the Central Coast. A beautiful day. Classic California blue sky, no clouds.
Yep. Okay, so you said Central Coast, California. Where approximately would that be?
We're in Atascadero, which is above San Luis Obispo, is the town most people know.
Atascadero, I know exactly where that is. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. I know that area well. Well, I'm so glad to have you here today because your story is one that is not only very unique in as far as guests that we've had on the podcast, but I think you also represent a sort of wide range of our listeners are kind of in a similar position as you, maybe not quite as far down the road as you, but definitely in a similar position and will be able to relate to you. So I'm really, really excited that you are here to tell your story to us today. And I'm also really grateful to Vera because Vera connected us, didn't she?
Yes, yes. She's my Italian teacher, which I think she's been my Italian teacher since, I guess, this whole last year. Yeah, so for about a year now.
So you've been working on your Italian for a year with Vera.
Mm-hmm.
She tells me you're really good. Your Italian is really good.
Well, that's nice. Thank you. I understand so much now, which is so exciting. I still feel like a caveman when I'm talking, but just like, okay, it's baby steps for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I can relate. I can certainly relate to that. And it is a really wonderful a both wonderful and frustrating thing when you understand, but then can't communicate back the way you want to, right? Yeah.
Definitely.
But that's progress, and that's just part of the journey.
Yes, and it is exciting to be a, like, sit there and like, oh, I understood all that. I understood what you said, or listened to, you know, a video or something like that, and like, it came through. I got it. I can't repeat it, but yes.
That's why you studying Italian with Vera is probably so important, because you are in California, and because you, we're going to get into your story. You've got a really great story, and we're going to get into it, but I think that in your situation, being able to have an Italian language coach that is fluent in Italian, that you meet with regularly for over a year now, that's probably one of the most effective ways to learn Italian when you're not living in Italy.
Yes, yeah. And most of my Italian language learning was done, you know, independently. I've taken little classes here and there, but, you know, a lot of it was just by myself. So yeah, that teacher definitely helps, so that you have somebody correct you.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, so you've got three kids. You have 12-year-old Cash, you have 8-year-old Cosette, and you have 2-year-old Giovanna.
Yes.
And your husband is Justin. And Lanielle, you own property in Italy.
Yes, in Umbria.
Tell us a little bit about where your place is, what kind of place you have, and how did you end up getting this place and even finding this place in the first place?
I've been to Italy enough time. I haven't been to every region or anything, but I've been north and south, and I honestly just know myself well enough, and what I had seen, that my heart was just drawn to that section. I did look down the south, because we have friends in Puglia, and I really love it down there, but every single time I asked myself, and I'm just like, where do I feel like I will be in Italy? It was always in the middle, like right in the heart, which Umbria is the heart of Italy, green heart of Italy. And yeah, I just kept coming back to that little section. And we looked at Southern Tuscany in the Maremma, and we looked at Northern Lazio, and then in Umbria, because I just was always drawn to kind of that valley that runs right through there. And so most of my searching was done online, you know, from a distance. I used the different websites for looking at homes for sale, and then I'd do Google Maps and I'd walk the streets and just kind of get a feel of the town, which for me, you know, I felt very confident, like, this is, I know exactly what I'm looking for, and I could Google Earth the town, and I know it doesn't show you everything, but I'd be like, nope, that's not it, that's not my town. It was enough, gave me enough to kind of yes or no different places. Yeah, we kind of started off there, and when we were ready to take the next step, we actually contacted a company that helped us show us the houses. They kind of found some houses for us, but then I sent them all of my houses that I'd found, and they organized coming to see everything, all the showings and stuff, because we were only going to be there for 2 weeks with three kids, and it was like, we need help. I just wasn't like in a place to contact realtors. And now hearing your story a little bit, I'm really glad I didn't go that way, because it would have been a disaster. So yeah, we had about a week of looking, or actually it was less than that. It was like 4 days that we gave them to go look at a few different little towns that that we'd kind of picked out, and a couple houses that they picked out too. But honestly, the house that we ended up choosing in the end was one that I had seen like a year before. I was like, and it was the one I had a feeling about. Even the town was one that, like, I heard the name and I was like, just in the back of my mind, in my heart, I was like, I think that's my town, but, you know, I can't say yes or no until I see it. But I just had a feeling.
You know how to listen to your intuition.
Yes, definitely.
That's like a superpower, isn't it?
I think it is. I think it is, because I know there's people that probably couldn't, or they'd get caught up in confusion or being able to make those choices. And I think that if you can follow your heart a little bit, it does help you with choices. You know, just I was set somewhere inside me, like I could just say no to a town and I wasn't nervous about like, oh, what if I'm missing out on something? I mean, there's a logical side of me too that was like, well, I need to be open and like make sure about that. But I looked at pictures and I just got feelings inside for like, yeah, that's something I want to see.
To trust yourself enough to know this is the town or this is not the town, this is the house or this is not the house. It's sort of like one of the highest forms of respect to yourself, isn't it? Because you're really saying, I trust that voice, that inner voice that's guiding me. Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, there was times that I'd see a name and just like, no, that's not my town. I'm not going to be calling that town. I could just feel it. No, no.
There really is something in a name. There are some towns that just telling, I would imagine myself saying the name of my town to people. And I'm just like, that's not going to work.
Yes, right. Yes. Yeah, so, no, that's not it. Yeah. I did the same thing.
I completely get this. I completely understand what you're saying. And I've never heard anybody else say that before. I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
Right. I know. It seems like a silly thing, but like, I don't know. You just know. Like, no.
When you're going to be calling a place by its name and calling it your home for the rest of your life, I don't think that's a small thing to consider. So I feel like that's a very fair. Because
there's a certain energy to everything and even the name itself. So, and I think it's really fun that the town that we ended up getting a place in was a name that I was drawn to long before we even saw it. And even the house that I saw was like, oh, this house just feels good. It feels right. And it was still available. Timing was good with COVID and everything, you know, so there wasn't as many people getting places in Italy. So we lucked out there. Yeah. And I just had a feeling about that town.
Okay. What is the name of the town?
It's called Ficule.
Ficule. Ficule. And that's in sort of southern Western Umbria, is that correct?
Yes, yeah. It's about 25 minutes north, northeast a little bit from Orvieto. So yeah, it's in the southern part. A lot of people know Orvieto, so maybe that helps a little bit.
How far are you from the city of Florence and Rome, those two cities?
It's nice because it's kind of right in the middle. We're pretty much an hour and a half from Florence and an hour and a half from Rome, and we're only about 10 minutes or so from the train station, 8 to 10 minutes, so that's nice. You can, you know, connect with the high-speed train that goes there, which is something I kind of envisioned for myself. Like, I just feel like I want to be connected to everything, so I want to have easy access to the train so that I can go to Venice for the weekend or something, or just, you know, get down to Rome and get on a plane and go somewhere. When I thought about being down in Puglia, it felt almost too disconnected from, like, being able to see the rest of the country. Just felt like, oh, it'll take more effort to get to those places, or maybe Venice won't be a weekend trip away. Like, it just felt like I was going to, I don't know, stick myself in a little box in Italy where I couldn't explore the entire country as much.
You can see two other regions besides yours from where you are?
Yes. Yeah. So there's a old castle, but, you know, just the pillar remains, or the castle remains, but you can see the pillar like standing up in the town. And if you're at the top of that, you can see Tuscany and Lazio from Umbria. So it's really kind of a neat position. The town's in a really beautiful spot.
So I'm assuming because of where you chose to be, you're not necessarily like beach life people. Like, that's not what you were wanting Italy to be for you. Like, oh, we want to be on the beach all the time. That's not number one priority.
No, I mean, I really love the beach and I like to have access to it. Like, I think that it's wonderful to be able to go for a day or for the weekend. I am a water person. I feel more comfortable knowing that the beach is accessible. The ocean is there. But it didn't need to be something that I saw all the time. You know, I never felt myself in like a beach town, even that, you know, possibly down in Puglia. If I decided down there, I might go for that because it just, it has a different feel down there. I don't know. But yeah, I just always pictured myself in rolling hills. I like being up on a hill or even up on a hill where we live here in California. I don't like being down in valleys. And yeah, and I don't really care for huge mountains. Even though I grew up in Montana, I am not a mountainous person. So I need to be like up, being able to survey the land and looking at everything instead of like tucked down into something.
You mentioned that you grew up in Montana. Now we know you've got your place in Italy. Now let's go back.
Yeah.
Because from owning a house in Italy, but growing up in Montana, those are not necessarily,
they don't really go together, right? Yeah. I grew up in a pretty small town in Montana, northwestern Montana. And, you know, I mean, there's absolutely no culture there, you know, especially at that time. There just wasn't that many people there. It's just all, you know, English-speaking people. I don't think I ever heard another language spoken unless it was a movie sometime in my teenage years, you know, when it was easier to watch movies. So yeah, my mom always loved Italy. I had one friend who wanted to travel there as well, you know, and I had books. I honestly fell more in love with Italy with the movie Only You with Robert Downey Jr. I also fell in love with Robert Downey Jr. And, you know, my first trip, actually, I like went some of the places because of that movie. And I probably watched that movie 1,000 times, just like dreaming of going to Italy. And then when I was 20, I wanted to go there and I just like wanted somebody to travel with me, but nobody was really committing to doing it. So I finally decided to go by myself. And I'd never been out. I had been down to Mexico and up to Canada, but I'd never really traveled by myself and or been out of the country in a way. And yeah, so I you know, created this whole trip. I had it pretty well planned out for myself. I, you know, did hostels ahead of time. I booked as much as I could so I didn't find myself like in a town not knowing where I was going to stay or whatever, because I was just a young girl traveling by myself. And yeah, I went for like 6 weeks and yeah, you know, growing up in Montana, I never felt at home. I never felt like it was my place. I always felt out of place. Like I don't belong here. I never really wanted to live there. Like, and I actually moved, to Portland with my family at the age of 18. Also never felt like I belonged there. And so when I stepped foot in Venice, when I was 21, that was the first time I'd ever felt like I was home. Like, this is where I belong. I finally found it. Like, and now I know where I'm supposed to be. So wow. It was just such an amazing feeling, because I think when you're kind of feel like an outsider or like you don't belong somewhere, and then you finally feel at home, like, I can still feel that sensation in my body of like, I finally found myself. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be. So I've been fighting so hard to get back. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, you said your mom loved Italy. Mm-hmm. But how did your mom and dad feel about you going to Italy alone at 20?
I think they were nervous, but I was also a very responsible person. And, you know, all the stuff that I did ahead of time, like probably if one of their kids was going to go traveling by themselves, I was the most responsible one to do it, you know, good, healthy amount of fear. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to go out by myself at night walking around, or, you know, I'm only going to do smart things because I don't really know where I'm at. And so I think they trusted me as much as a parent could, you know. I know, and I still called them, you know, quite a bit, and we emailed and stuff like that, so that they knew that I was safe. And I probably did, I don't remember now, I'm sure I did, like every evening or every time I was at someplace new, like, I'm safe, I'm good, you know. So
did you hit mainly the highlights on that first trip? What year was that, by the way?
That was 2002. Yeah. And so I did, I flew into Venice and I actually traveled down to Modena after that, close to Bologna, simply because I use Hostels International, I think it was called, or Hosteling International. And those were the places they had hostels because I was really uncomfortable with not having a place to stay. And, you know, the internet was new enough, you know, like, and so they had a hostel in Modena. So I went there and then I headed down to Florence after that. And from Florence, I went to Pisa. I went to Cortona from there. And then, it's getting a little blurry. What did I do? And then from there, I actually headed down to Naples and spent some time in Naples and then headed further south down to the Amalfi Coast and saw Amalfi and Positano. I stayed outside of Positano in a little town called Praiano. And that was actually the only hotel that I actually booked because there was no hostels down there. So I booked this little hotel online, which was so beautiful, like my own little like terrace with lemon trees. And it was like, this is the most magical place I'd ever been in my life. And then from there, I headed back up and spent time in Rome. And then I flew out of Rome. So yes, mostly the big places, except for Modena, which was kind of this off place, but that's just what worked. Yeah.
Okay, so you were in Portland, Oregon. That doesn't feel like home either.
Mm-hmm.
And then you end up in California. Tell me how tell me about how you and Justin met and tell me how the story then continued.
Yeah. So let's see. So after that first trip to Italy, I also came. I mean, I wanted to stay there so bad, but that was kind of beyond me at that point. Too big of a dream, you know, it wasn't possible for who I was then. But I did end up going back 2 years later with my mom and sister, and we took another, like I have to show you this country. We took another, like, six-week trip and kind of went back to some of the same places, went to some new places. I saw Pompeii on that first trip, too. That one was amazing, yeah. And so after that trip with my mom and sister, like, when we were leaving, we were in Monarola in the Cinque Terre, and we just came up with the idea to start an Italian coffee shop when we got back to Portland. And so I spent the next year after that kind of planning this coffee shop and, you know, this business. And we ended up starting up the most beautiful little coffee shop in Vancouver, which is right over the river from Portland. They're kind of connected. That was so gorgeous. We remodeled this old building. We had incredible gelato from the Italian coffee. Like, it was magical. It was called Cafe de Lusso. And so, yeah, that was like my next big adventure. And that did not end up making it, but it was an incredible experience. I got to like have Italian coffee every day, like gelato every day, like, just, God, nobody's going to miss a bite or two. So yeah, I wanted to go back to Italy like really soon after that. And we kind of created this thing to hopefully bring Italy closer. It did end up pushing it further away because it was just so married to the coffee shop. And then it just kind of didn't really make it after like the economic problems of like 2008, 2009, especially in Portland. So we closed that down around the same time that I met Justin. So we met in 2007 and we were both in long-term relationships and we met through my brother. They were kind of friends already. We had met a couple times and my brother was constantly trying to get us together. He was like, get together with my sister. You guys are just like, be perfect for each other. But we both had like boyfriend and girlfriend at that time. And then there was just one dinner. My brother invited us and everybody out to dinner. And like, I was the only one that ended up making it. My boyfriend couldn't come. And Justin came and nobody else was there. So my brother set it up and then we had hors d'oeuvres and he left. So he left Justin and I there together. And then that was it. After that night, we like We broke up with our significant others like soon after. We were engaged in 5 weeks and married in 5 months. And we've been together Whoa. For 16 years.
So wow.
We had kind of a fun, fast, like fall in love right away story.
So you and Justin get together and you subsequently have 3 kids together.
Mm-hmm. So we have 3 kids. We moved down to California at kind of with the economic stuff that was happening. And we came down here in 2012, actually, but Portland was just kind of difficult. It was a hard city to live in, actually. And so we came down here. My son was about 1 in 2012 and just kind of, and we moved to the area, never been here before. My sister said we'd like it. And so we just packed up and left. And yeah, we're here. And it's a beautiful place. And it's sunny, totally different from Portland, which I definitely needed. I'm a sun baby.
Okay, so due to another sibling's recommendation, you moved to, what great siblings you have.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, you moved to this town on the central coast of California, and you've been living there ever since.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, 11 years.
I've been here 11 years, yeah.
Are you trying to leave California or trying to move to Italy? Which would you say it is, or is it a little bit of both?
I think it's a little bit of both, because I feel like if everything worked out well, that I would just move to Italy. Like, I'm confident enough that my love for it, and I would probably never turn back. Like, I love it so much, and I just feel that inside of me. I could go. I don't know if we will be able to do 100% of the time, but I at least want to move towards doing it, you know, 3 months, maybe to 6 and a half the year, something like that. So, and I homeschool my children. So I've been preparing for this day for a long time. And also, I don't know if Vera told you, but I've also been teaching my kids Italian. And so even like my son, I started teaching him Italian when he was, even before I really knew it well, like since they were born. So, and they're amazing.
So you're learning Italian with them. So that's going to help you learn Italian too, of course.
Yeah. Yes. And we try and speak it as much as possible. And this was kind of an experiment with the kids. So when my son was born, I was like, gosh, I just really want, because I never had a second language, never heard a second language, you know, and I know how important it is from such a young age, like just, you know, the younger, the better. So it's like, I have to figure out how to give this kid Italian, even though I can't really speak it. I mean, at that time I could probably, you know, speak some tourist Italian, maybe a little bit more, but not great. I mean, and so YouTube, it was recently discovered. And I was like, well, I'm just going to see if I can find some cartoons on YouTube. And there wasn't that many, but I was able to find a few. And so I just started setting him down. You know, as soon as he could sit up, he was probably like 8 months old. And we watched morning cartoons in Italian. And that just became our daily ritual. And like, if they watched anything, or if they even now, if they watch anything, unless it's a family movie, we watch in Italian. Because one of my things was I knew that I could like teach him some little Italian. If you get like kids teaching Italian things, it's so basic, you know, it's just these like, it's kind of that classic language teaching. It's like, I just need him to hear native speakers fluently speaking and just see what he gets. And so it was kind of an experiment, but I remember him being 1 year old and asking him like, where's the cows, or like, vedi le mucche? And he went over to the window and pointed, because the place we lived, like, he could see cows. And I was like, oh, it's working. He understood what I said in Italian. It's so incredible. And even now, so they all can speak it. They all understand it really, really well. And they sometimes teach me stuff because they still watch things. And so they'll just like say some word that I've never said before to me in Italian, or like, you know, find something in the house that like, it's not something that you'd normally say, or and like they'll say it in Italian because that's actually the only way they've heard it because they've watched it in something. So yeah, it's kind of this magical experiment that really paid off. And I feel like they have Italian on a different level than if they were learning it. Like they've just absorbed it from the time they were babies. And even Giovanna understands everything we say to her, you know? So I think it's incredible.
I think you're probably being a little bit modest when you say that you can understand it, but you can't speak it. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I can speak a lot of basic things, but it doesn't feel like an advanced level. So I feel like I speak to them all the time, but it's a simplified language, you know, a lot of present, a lot of passato prossimo. But some of the more difficult stuff, getting into the congiuntivo and like those things, I still mess up sometimes. And so I have to stop and think a little bit more before I speak to them. But with the stuff that I know, I was just, another thing that I was like, I'm going to try and just speak to them as much as I can. So then they hear me speak it and then we'll have some communication. So the stuff that I can speak, I just speak to them all day long if I can at my level. And I'm constantly on them to speak back to me too, because the older they get, the harder it gets to like, Italiano.
I am so impressed. I mean, the level of commitment that you have to teach three children to become fluent in Italian when you are not. That is like, I have never heard anything like that in my life, first of all. I mean, I'm just blown away. And you have created your own little community of Italian fluency right around you in your own home. What in the world?
That's true. And I love that. And sometimes when we're like, we've been on vacation, go to grandma's and like, oh, I can't wait to get home and like be in my little Italian pocket, because I have kind of created my own little Italian bubble when I can't be in Italy, that I love a lot. Yeah.
What a fabulous gift you have given your children.
Thank you. I try to like it. That's what I was hoping. And I think now, just last year, I guess it's been for maybe a year and a half, like once a week, I do an Italian lesson for them with a teacher in Rome. Because I knew that, you know, there's certain stuff I can't correct them. Like, is that wrong? I don't know. I think, you know? And so I was like, okay, I want you guys to be talking to somebody and then a native can correct you, because I just don't always know. Some stuff I do, like that's wrong, but there's a lot of things I just don't. And so it did kind of finally get to the level where I think I want a little extra for them. But yeah, it's amazing. And when we went to Italy last year, we met up with some friends who had a family over, because they had a little boy that was wanting to learn some English. And so like, okay, well, the kids can get together and like talk in Italian and English a little bit. And my son, I think because the little Italian boy was actually a little more nervous to speak some English, but I think Cash has kind of been now going back and forth enough. He just sat and talked in Italian for like over an hour, like chit-chatting, like 12-year-olds do. And I don't, you know, if it was all right, but it was amazing that it was coming out of his brain that fast. That's what I was so surprised at. Like, how are you doing this? I mean, at home we chat, but I was like, just da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it was incredible. It's just a miracle. I didn't know this could happen. But yeah, my daughter's a little more, just a little more shy anyway. And so she doesn't talk quite as much as he does, but yeah, she understands it all.
My mind is like totally blown right now. Now, the only one that we haven't talked about in this equation is Justin, your husband. Mm-hmm. Now, how does Justin fit into the Italian bubble?
He just goes along with our little Italian world. He hasn't really studied any Italian or whatever, but he does actually understand a lot of the simple stuff that we've said so many times. Which is kind of fun, you know, to see that even he's picked it up and just like being around it. Yeah, I'm hoping that like when we're in Italy more, that, you know, he'll get a chance to speak a little more or be more excited to study, you know, pick it up more, because he does really like to communicate with people. And so, yeah, but he hasn't really picked up the studying part of it yet, or just trying as much himself. But he just goes and takes our kids with him. These are my little translators. So,
so if you could snap your fingers right now, I think, yeah, you know what I'm going to say.
Definitely.
You could snap your fingers and just, bam, we're in Italy. Our lives are in Italy. You would do it.
Oh, yes. Definitely. Yeah. Not.
What's keeping that from happening? What are the barriers for you, just practical barriers, keeping you and Justin from moving your family there?
Just work, really, being able to work there. You know, and I've looked at some of the visa stuff, you know, we kind of like stopped because we're like, well, this just doesn't seem like something that's going to happen for us right now. We might need to step back. So yeah, I think if we could figure out how to have online jobs, you know, or figure out maybe what we could do in Italy, it's just so different from what we have done with the cakes and the landscaping type stuff. And, you know, we've been so hands-on, so nothing that we've really done has been online work. And so we just haven't figured out, like, how we'd go there and function. Make enough money to be, you know, comfortable and stuff like that. So that's a work in progress, that side of things.
But you are working on it, from what you said. You're building an online business.
Yes, I'm building an online business
as well. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have my blog that, you know, I'm just going to keep growing and keep working on it. And then I also am creating like a digital download online business, just as, you know, it could be passive income, something I can keep working on, but just so, like, I'm going to start creating something on that side of things to see where it goes, you know, and hopefully it'll do amazing things, you know. Right.
Oh, I believe it will, because anyone that has as much tenacity as you clearly do is going to make it work. Now, you mentioned cakes and you mentioned landscaping. Who does cakes and who does landscaping? And tell me what that means.
So Justin has his own business where he does landscape architecture. So he designs fountains and designs like the hardscape of somebody's house. So he redoes all of that and he does the design for it. And so, yeah, he's really, really talented at that. Very good at doing water work, water with fountains and stuff. Like, maybe you could go to Italy, do that type of thing. I don't know. And then before I had Giovanna, I owned and operated a wedding cake business here. And so that I had for like 7 years. And it was just a cottage industry. So we converted our garage at our house. I had a kitchen out there and I pretty much just did wedding cakes and a few special orders. So, but a lot of my work, even before I had the coffee shop, like I did cake decorating. I fell into that when I was a teenager and it was just really easy to me. And so, yeah, I did that for a while. And so, but I sold that so I could have Giovanna because I was like, I know I can't have three kids and keep this going, since it was just me. I did all the consultations, all the emails, all of the production of the wedding cakes and then delivery and stuff like that. So it was kind of a 6 day a week job. And with my second child, you know, I even did the homeschooling with my first one. And then my second one was young enough, Cosette was young enough, but you know, she'd come out there and be playing at my feet while I'm making wedding cakes. Like, here's your basket of toys while we're out here. And it was a lot, but it was also charming because I got to have them with me all the time. You know, there was a level of craziness with them there, but also just, it was a really beautiful time as well. Like, I have lots of good memories of just looking down and there's my babies playing while I'm making this wedding cake. But it wasn't ever anything except for the art, which I love creating. And I still love doing the wedding cakes. I didn't totally love all the baking and stuff like that. So, and I felt myself wanting to leave it anyway, because I've always been driven towards Italy and I want to work with Italy somehow. I want to, like, that is my future and I can't totally see it yet. But I didn't have the passion for cakes, you know, as much anymore. And I just, if I don't have passion for what I'm doing, I can't really do it. Like, I just, I have to feel what I'm doing and just really love it, or I'm just not going to be there. You know, it's not. Yeah, I'm that type of person that I don't know. I have to love what I'm doing, or I don't know. I probably did be depressed. I don't know. Sometimes looking at where I am, because I had a really hard childhood and life, like lots of stuff to overcome. But when I do look at my life, like what I've created and where I've gotten, like it really kind of a miracle. My sister and I talk about this because we're both like, gosh, from where we came from, like I probably should be working in a gas station in Montana. And not that anything against anybody who works in a gas station. God bless them, because it's not a job that a lot of people would want to do. But I should have never gotten this far, in a way, from what we came from. And so, yeah, sometimes I look at my life and it's like, it really is amazing where I'm at. And just that I have created all this. And it's taken a long time since the first time I was in Italy, you know? So
not only have you had to overcome a difficult background, but also the process of having your three children was very difficult as well, wasn't it?
Yes. Because I was sick with all three of them 24/7, 7 days a week for the entire pregnancies. My son was probably the best one, because there was times when it was a little more mild. But yeah, my daughter, Cosette, the first one, hers was traumatizing. Like I still, you know, she's eight now and I still get nauseous when I think about going to the beach, because like when I was, some of the times when I was really sick, we went there a few times, and I have to overcome that. I'll get a wave of nausea just thinking about the beach because I was so, so sick. And, you know, there's certain foods that I've never touched again. But with her actual experiences, if I think about going to that place again, I feel sick. And so I have to overcome it, because I love going to the beach. Like, oh, it's going to be okay once I get there. I'm not actually going to feel sick. So yeah, those were really, really difficult times. And especially with Cosette, because I had the wedding cakes too, through wedding season, and just working 6 days a week. And I mean, it was kind of a nightmare. It was a very dreamy time, because I was so, you know, pregnancy is kind of dreamy anyway, and then throw in the nausea and all the work. and Giovanna was the same, but since I had gotten rid of the wedding cakes, it was a little bit less, you know, because it just wasn't, even though I had two other kids and we were doing the homeschooling, it wasn't the same because I didn't have the business. So I felt like I could take a nap every once in a while. And with Cosette, I didn't once take a nap because I had the business. And you know, it was, yeah, it was amazing. So worth it. I mean, and that's why I had Giovanna again. I was like, I know, even if I'm sick again, which I probably will be, because both my boy and my girl I was sick with, so chances are. But I was like, at least I know what's on the other side. I can do it one more time. And yeah. And I'm so grateful, because I just love being a mom so much. And if it was easier, I would have had a lot more.
I mean, okay, so you're describing this life to me, and I'm like thinking to myself, man, sometimes when I think that I'm really pushing myself to my limits, I hear a story like yours, and I'm hearing three children, I mean, over the course of several years, but three children, a wedding cake business, and like life-threatening levels of nausea while teaching them all Italian. I mean, all of that together just sounds like, it just sounds like too much for one human to bear.
There was some days. Yeah.
Wow. I spent a number of years in the event industry and owned an event.
Yes, I saw that. Because do you do that anymore? Because
Well, on very, very limited basis, mm-hmm. and only on clients that I really love and want to work for. It doesn't matter how big the budget is at this point. It's more a matter of like my own sanity. So I can relate to needing to unload something. But I've been around enough people that make wedding cakes to know that they're a very unique and special kind of person. And there's two types of people who make wedding cakes. There are the ones who literally allow it to put them in the hospital because they completely lose their mind and they can't hold they can't handle the stress because it's very stressful. Mm-hmm. And then there's the people that are just calm, shouldn't be calm, but they're somehow calm. And I think you fall into that category.
Yeah.
You clearly do.
And you know, it was nice with my business because I could kind of regulate how much work that I put on myself. And I'm not going to lie, there's plenty of times that I was crying in the kitchen at, you know, whatever, 1 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, or something went wrong and you're just like, oh, I don't have time for it to go wrong. I just want to be with my babies. Like, it's as soon as I get done working, I get to go be with my kids. And so it definitely wasn't all beautiful. It wasn't always my best. But, you know, the art side of the wedding cakes is what I really loved. And, you know, I did the rest of it because I could. And, but the wedding cakes made me so happy to decorate. And I love making things. I mean, I love making things beautiful. Like, I feel like that is why I'm here in life. I am here to make things beautiful because I just, whether it's decorating the house or a wedding cake or just anything, like, I love making it pretty. I really was, you know, at my best, like, during the decorating. And I've thought, like, someday about going to Italy and not starting up cakes, but some other craft, because I love to work with my hands so much. And so we'll see. I've got lots of big plans for Italy. I just got to get there.
Yeah, giorno per giorno, right?
Yeah, esattamente. Mm-hmm.
So you have this house in Umbria. Is this house a city house or a country house or something in between?
Oh, yes. It is in a little city. And, you know, I kind of always wanted that, even though I love to have some land, and I picture myself having more property in Italy someday because I love to have land. I mean, I love to garden and I love to make things myself, and anytime I can do that, I'm just like so excited. Like, I just love to make kombucha or love to make liqueurs or like anything that I can create that my hands picked it and I made it. There's such a deep sense there of, I don't know, it's just so beautiful, and it makes life so beautiful, and it makes it more special if your hands have touched it and you've created it and produced this thing. So someday I hope to have more of that in Italy. But for now, I saw myself being in a city. And it's not a big town. It's only about 1,500 people. And the house is right at the very top. Like, it's got, you know, it's got buildings. It's on a corner, so it has two sides that have are attached to other buildings. And it has an incredible terrace, which is one of the things that, like, I wanted to be able to see out. And if I didn't have any land, like, I had to have a terrace. I had to have something to get outside and, like, you know, view the land. And so we're actually at the very top of the town, at the very end row. And the terrace, like, looks out. It's like almost got a 365-degree view. You know, it's really incredible. Its placement. It's just right at the end, and it looks out at everything.
Wow. Okay. So you're in a little village in a great part of Umbria. How many total months have you been able to spend in this property in Umbria since you guys purchased the house?
We've only been able to spend 2 weeks in it. So, yeah. So not enough. We just purchased it last year. And the purchase took about a year to complete because they actually had a renter there. And we weren't in a huge hurry to get it. So we let the renter kind of like finish off their lease. And so... I guess it wasn't maybe it was more like eight to nine months, really, from kind of the time we placed our offer to the time the house closed. And that all went fairly well. We did end up, when we finally got in the house and the renter that was there before, they did not want to leave. The renter did, but the owners were selling it. And actually, real quick, I'll go back to when we went to look at houses. we didn't look at that many. I think we looked at like maybe 8 different properties. And this one we went to go look at. We looked at one more in the town, and we went to go look at this one. And the lady was like, the renter, it ended up not being there today. And they were making it super hard to like, it's like, okay, well, we're here for a couple more days. We're going up to Venice and then we're going to be back. Like, what can we do? Because this is the house I have a feeling about. I came to Italy to see this house pretty much. Like, I got to see it because I, you know, 3 kids, I'm only here for 2 weeks. And this is my number one house. This is the one I had a feeling about. And so we went up to Venice and came back, and like, there was still one more problem, but it was like, they finally contacted the owner of the house. I'm like, you have to do something because this lady is going out of her way to make sure that she's not there or she can't let us in. So the owner finally did something, called her or whatever. And so we were able to see it. And I was so glad that we did. So I was like, this is definitely the one. Like, I knew it. I'm so happy we came back. But that same renter actually ended up like clipping the lighting in the house and taking the lights with them, which was a little disappointing because we were like, oh, at least, because the house is totally empty. I mean, there was a little bit of furniture they had, but we were like, take it out because like in writing, please take it out, because it was the big stuff, like these huge, awful armoires and things that were like, we definitely don't want them, and we definitely don't want to have to get them out of the house. So we made sure to have that like in writing that was going to be gone. But yeah, they ended up taking the lighting too, which was too bad. So like, at least we'll have the lights. Nope, they clipped. Luckily, my husband knows a lot of electric stuff, even though he doesn't know Italy stuff. So we were able to go get lamps, and he was able to like do the wiring, you know. Good enough. It's not obviously complete wiring, but yeah, we were able to put lighting in so we could stay there. We got mattresses and we kind of camped out in our house, but I was like, we really want to be there. Just, you know, we stayed in Airbnb for a couple days while we got that stuff set up, but we got mattresses, and I had worked out ordering mattresses ahead of time. That was the one thing I was like, as long as we have some place to sleep, then we can get a cooktop, you know, we'll have the lights, which we didn't. So we got lamps and lighting. And then we just went and bought bedding, you know, in Orvieto. We went and bought some bedding at this beautiful little, very expensive bedding, but all made in Italy. Because I was like, we want to try and just buy made in Italy stuff or old antiques or whatever, you know, like, and so we can, whatever, support the community and just support Italy and all its beauty.
So your love of making things beautiful and your love of decorating and being an artist is not fully even expressed in this home yet.
Mm-mm. No, but I'm so excited for it to be. We have some work to do. It is livable, but you know, the kitchen just has a sink in it. And it's outdated. It's from like probably the 50s, but it is livable. You know, we stayed there. We ended up not having any hot water the whole time, which was too bad, even though we gave them a lot of time to get it hooked up. But it took like 4 months to get the hot water hooked up. Thankfully, we had electricity because I was like, we got a couple little space heaters for the rooms at night, you know. So we roughed it a little bit, but it was, you know, I don't know. We're in our Italy house, so it didn't really matter. It's like, and we had a friend that had let us take a couple showers at her house, which was kind of her, so we didn't have to take cold showers. But I'm so excited to redo it, to get the work done, the basic work done, and then enjoy creating it, really. Like, I expect it to kind of be a slow process because I really want to go pick out pieces that just speak to me, you know, and just like, I'm probably most excited about creating this house. And so I can't wait to just enjoy every second of going to places and choosing pieces and putting it together. And because it is just a blank slate, which I've never had before, you know, even like growing up, you always have a little something that comes with you from your parents, or, you know, you kind of slowly accumulate your life. And so I've never stepped into a place where it's like, this is empty. Like, I just can create whatever. I'm not trying to work around this dresser that I already had or anything. And so that's a really exciting world that I've never experienced. And I just like, yeah, I can barely contain my excitement for that one.
As a fellow designer and artist and someone who is extraordinarily visual, mm-hmm. I would imagine, I can very much relate, but I would imagine you spend a lot of your day, a lot of your daydreaming extra time in your mind when you're not teaching your children, well, educating your children and also teaching them Italian. But I would imagine you spend a lot of your time doing work in your mind in that house.
Yeah. And just in, just Italy. I mean, my mind is always there. That's why I physically need to be there now. Yeah.
So you will be.
Yeah. Sooner or later.
It will happen. You've already made so many, taken such huge steps. And the memories of you and your family roughing it, as you say, sort of camping out in your house, in this house that has had lights clipped by the vindictive renter. I mean, what great memories.
Right? Yeah, they were. Everybody was so happy too. Honestly, the kids fought less. Like, just like, it was this beautiful, beautiful time. Everybody was so excited. And yeah, what wonderful, like, first memories. Just a neat adventure, you know? The kids will always, I mean, not Giovanna, but I feel like the other kids are old enough to remember that. And
It's just, not only have you given them the language, you're also giving them the country and the culture. And I mean, you're giving it to yourselves as well, but mm-hmm. you're giving it to your children. And I think that is just really, really fabulous. It's something so rare. Most children are just treated like little employees from the time that they are 5 or 6 years old and they're marched off to school. And they're literally trained to just be a little soldier.
In
our global economy. And I don't think that's natural, and I don't like that. And so I can see the very mindful way you're raising your children. And I think that is really, really fabulous. And I wish there were more people raising children in the world, especially in the United States, the way you are. I'm wondering how you feel about the region that you chose. What have you discovered about Umbria, even though it's been limited? I know you have a lot of discovery and exploring to do, but in the time that you've been able to be there, even prior to purchasing a home, what are your thoughts about Umbria? Do you feel like Umbria is it? It speaks to you. It's your heart of Italy. It's your home.
I do, yeah. I mean, I actually, Umbria, except for being along that that valley there, I haven't actually ventured deep into Umbria. So I have not ever been to Assisi or Perugia or like the big towns of Umbria. But I do feel like, I mean, when we were there in that town, everybody just felt like they belonged. Like and we felt such a wonderful welcoming also from people. I mean, people really, really love that either I can speak Italian. They love so much that the kids can speak Italian. I mean, the going to Italy with the kids being able to understand Italian has been such a beautiful experience. I'm almost like, I don't ever want to go to Italy when I don't have my kids with me speaking Italian, because they're so, you know, the Italians open up to children so much more than they do to an adult or whatever, you know? I mean, and they're kind of a beautiful way to get into a community a little bit, where you might not have been able to before, because Italians talk to kids more, they smile more at them. And not that they don't, not that they're not open to other people, but there's just something different with kids. They really love children. And I love that. So everywhere that we've been, from restaurants to like a little hardware store, the experience has been so rich having the children with us, and that we all speak Italian. And it's just been so beautiful. I mean, I definitely know that Italy has its drawbacks, and I'm very aware, and I listen to so many stories, and I don't have a, you know, I'm aware. I'm not like blind to its pitfalls, but yeah, the side of it that we've felt there and that I feel like is there for us is so rich that I feel that I would leave my life here to go there. Like the life that I feel like I could live there just feels so magical compared to here. Just everything about like the basic daily life in Italy is so different from here. And I just connect with it so much, so much more.
What you just said about your kids is just, that's beyond fabulous.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful, really beautiful. Nothing that I ever would have expected, nothing that I was even planning, I guess, when I started teaching them. I just wanted them to have a second language from the time they were children. So then a third language, if they wanted to, would be easier, you know, just like, but I didn't realize, because I hadn't been to Italy with children, how beautiful it was going to be traveling there with my kids. And I love it so much. I mean, that might be the thing that I love most about going to Italy. It's just the experience of being there with my children and how the Italians are with kids too. And so, and I remember like the first time, it's when we went to look around at Lazio. And I think it was 2019 when we went there. And we were going to a little restaurant like near Lake Bolsena, one of the little towns. I can't remember the name of it. And my husband and Cash went in to get a table. You know, it's just a really small town, no tourists or anything like that. And the gentleman started speaking to my husband in Italian. And he was like, I don't know, but like, here's my son. And my son asked for like a table for four people in Italian. And the guy was like, oh my God, Aris, like the kid speaks Italian. And he went back and got everybody in the kitchen, like, come out. Kid speaks Italian. And because, you know, I guess you just wouldn't expect it, especially if the parent wasn't speaking it. You know, and there was just so much excitement, you know, it was just so beautiful. I mean, the experience, so much fun. And yeah. The Italians don't always understand. I've had people like, why are you teaching them Italian? Like, why do you want to learn Italian? Why are you teaching them? Like, why do they know Italian? Like, I just love it so much. You know, I love it so much and I want to have a life here. And I knew that their life would be richer. But yeah, I've had that question. Like, why Italian? Yes, it's the best.
There's probably no single thing that you could possibly do to signal to your neighbors, your future fellow countrymen and women here in Italy, there's nothing, no greater signal to them that you are truly committed and Italy is important to you than the fact that you have raised your children speaking their language while they're still living in their home country.
True, yeah.
It blows their mind in every way possible.
That's true, yeah.
I want to, before we say goodbye today, I want you to share with us about your blog. You have a really wonderful blog that you are documenting this journey. And I can guarantee you, everybody listening to this, we all feel like underachievers now. But you're also so lovely. You're not arrogant about it. And you're not the kind of person to rub this sort of thing in your face, I can tell. So people are going to want to follow this journey of yours. So besides your blog, which, by the way, the name of your blog is lifelemonsitaly.com, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What do you talk about in your blog? What are you sharing in this blog? And how long have you been doing this?
So I started it, I think, at the end of 2018. Gosh, I'm trying to remember now. And I just felt like I was starting to move away from the cakes and I just felt so much passion for Italy that I just needed to get something out somehow. And I was like, and I felt also just kind of that I wanted to write something, even though I'd never really written before. And kind of the way I grew up, we did some homeschool growing up as well, but, you know, I kind of didn't do tons of schooling. So I'd never like written papers, I'd never written essays, like I'd never written for people before, for anybody to read ever, because we were homeschooled. And But I, in the back of my mind, I always kind of was a writing, you know, like I'd see some scene and I'd start kind of writing what I'd write about it in my head. And so I just felt like I think that I want to write something. I love taking pictures. I love doing recipes. And so I kind of had that idea. Like I'm going to start doing a few recipes and start writing. And it has kind of evolved, but mostly I do recipes, all, you know, Italian themed. If it's not an Italian recipe, that maybe has just some little Italian spin to it. The rest has just kind of been our stories of traveling there and some stuff that we've done with the kids and just some other, like maybe like resources, you know. I've done a post on like just different Italian movies that you could watch, or, you know, Italian gifts that you could buy, stuff like that. But mostly it's been the recipes and the travel posts. And that's kind of the two things I have the most passion about. I have more time and I'm in Italy more traveling. Like I could almost see it being mostly travel. But I still do love doing the recipes and sharing little stuff there. And even more, I think when I'm in Italy, I would love that, because I love the idea of seasonal eating and like going to the market and creating a recipe or finding a recipe with what is in season at that time, and sharing that. So mostly it's Italy travel and food. It changes depending on how busy I am, and I'm trying to start this other side business. So sometimes once a week or once a month, you know. And I don't post tons, you know, nothing that people are going to get bogged down with in their mailboxes, and not bunch of pop-ups, which I love. Like, oh, I just like to go to my website and look at my recipes, because sometimes when I go to those other websites, it's like pop-up, 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 and you can't even like read the recipe. So I keep mine very simple.
Okay, so just repeat that again. The name of your site is?
LifeLemonsItaly.com.
Okay, and you also have an Instagram page.
Yes. And that is under the same name, but it's Life.Lemons.Italy.
Okay, so I'm going to have those both linked in the notes for this episode. So any of you, and I'm sure you will all want to follow our wonderful guest today, Lanyel. Is just incredible. So we're going to want to follow this journey and the journey of her three extraordinary children and husband as well. So LifeLemonsItaly.com, Life.Lemons.Italy on Instagram. Those will both be linked in this episode. Well, Lanyel, I hope that in a year or so we reconnect and we talk to you after you've had a chance to do your magic on your beautiful new Italian home. And maybe you'll be a little further down the road of living in Italy full time, but your journey is so inspiring. And I really appreciate your willingness to share it with us.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much. It was so fun to be here and kind of talk about it all too. You know, I don't always get to sit down and tell people about some of this stuff. So it's fun to reminisce and kind of think about it all for myself again as well. Like, yeah, it's been a really amazing adventure getting there that's evolving still. And so it's exciting to think about what it will become.
Well, we will be following you. Like I mentioned earlier, you and I might be neighbors soon.
Yes, that is very exciting.
Which would be so delightful. So I will certainly be staying in touch with you, and I will be keeping our listeners posted as well. And we look forward to having you back on the podcast for a follow-up one day soon.
I love it. That would be amazing. Amazing.
Thanks again, Lanyel, and we look forward to staying in touch with you.
Thank you so much. I look forward to it too.
See, Nathan, I told you, she's the best. I mean, Lanyel, isn't she the sweetest? And her life is so interesting. And of course, she's so sweet to me. So thank you, Lanyel.
Even before we started recording, she was telling me how much she really, really appreciates her lessons with you. And because she's really advanced in Italian, and of course we talked so much about her children and how wonderful they are, I think really appreciates your style of teaching. She mentioned this to me because of how your level of speaking and understanding, writing Italian, is even more advanced than most Italians. So I think she really appreciates the fact that she's learning Italian. She's an advanced Italian speaker, but she's learning Italian from someone who is also very advanced. So that's nice. But it's also nice that, from my perspective, that you have the ability to teach those of us who are not so natural at learning Italian as Laniel is.
I actually love all my students. I don't care about their level. I think it's so fun and rewarding because, you know, with beginners, I have the chance to let you into the language and to sort of ease you into it. And sometimes surprise you with, oh, you don't know this yet, but we have 17 tenses and 18 verb moods and different conjugation that you have to learn, but don't worry about that. Let's stick to I am, you are right now. Or, you know, with more advanced students, I can actually discuss formal Italian, written Italian, red tape Italian, or like in her case, words for kids. Because you don't find books for adult learners that talk about how do you say, oh, go potty, you know, or things like that. Because adults don't need them. Kids usually don't study that. But a language is, you know, a mix of all of this. So, yeah, I love teaching you all.
Well, thanks again, Vera, for sharing Laniel with us. That was really a treat. And speaking of treats, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to share with us today about this beautiful green region of Umbria, because I know you have some interesting things prepared. I always learn so much. So take it away, Vera. What do you have to tell us about Umbria today?
Well, first of all, that it's a region that I know pretty well because it's right here. Okay, it's literally 45 minutes drive from where I live. Sometimes when I need to go, I don't know, furniture shopping or something bigger, I go to Perugia and it's less than an hour. Or when I want to visit a beautiful city like Perugia, I just go there. And well, I also spent a few short holidays, like long weekends there because it's so close and yet so beautiful. Let's say that it's very similar to Tuscany, but somewhat rougher in the landscape. And I don't know, I just like it. I just like the vibe of it. So it's a region in central Italy, obviously, and it borders Marche, Lazio, and Toscana, okay? It's the only region in peninsular Italy, so south of the Apennine Mountains, with no coast. So it's not on the sea, it's a landlocked region. And there are only 5 landlocked regions in Italy, and the other ones are Val d'Aosta, Piemonte, Lombardia, and Trentino Alto Adige. So up there on the Alps, right? So this is kind of a unique thing. And it's in central Italy, and it's also, and by central we mean north-south, right, on a north-south axis, but also east-west, even if Italy is so thin, it's right there in the middle. So we say that it's the heart of Italy, actually, and it was considered back in the days the center of the world because, you know, the Papal Empire was there. It's right in the middle of Italy, and there was actually this, I know it sounds crazy, this is a legend, of course, and like the very center was a cafe, and the, you know, when you play pool and there are those tiny, tiny pins on the table. The central pin was of that cafe was considered the center of the world.
Oh my.
This is just a joke, but it is very central. Okay, so it can't get any more Italian than this. That's probably why I love Umbria so much. It's like quintessential Italian. It's a pretty small region. Actually, it's the 5th smallest region in Italy. Only 2 province, Perugia, which is also the capital city of Umbria, and Terni, that's the other province. But there are plenty of hamlets, villages, little towns, and some of them are famous all over the world, like Assisi, Narni, toddy, norcia, spoleto, and so on. And it is a very small region, but it's very rich. First of all, there's a lake, like the fourth biggest lake in Italy. And, you know, the big lakes are up in the north, Lago Maggiore, Lago di Como, Lago di Garda, and this is Lago Trasimeno. It's very big. It also has two islands on it, but it's very, very shallow. It's like a pool, like 7 meters deep. Yeah. So it's very safe. You can go there and have a nice vacation and swim. And then Umbria is crossed north to south by the river Tevere. I never remember how you call it in English. Tiber River. It's called Tevere in Italian.
Okay.
And it crosses Umbria. And there are also many other rivers. There are mountains. Some are really high. And rolling hills, like in Tuscany. So there are rivers, there are mountains, there are lakes and waterfalls. Like La Cascata delle Marmore is beautiful. And caves, okay? You can also see caves and explore, and it's just so beautiful. And agriculture is a big deal in Umbria, especially around the area of Colfiorito. It's famous all over Italy. There are obviously vineyards and olive trees, pretty much like Tuscany, but also tobacco fields and crops like lentils or chickpeas or beans or potatoes or spelt. Spelt is also a big thing. And it's famous for truffles. I mean, those are not cultivated, but yeah, very famous for truffles. Now, if we talk about the history of Umbria, as usual, it's a very long one, but it's, you know, pretty simple. First of all, the name Umbria derives from the Umbri, an ancient tribe that lived in that area, right? And this tribe sort of flourished, and they had bigger towns, and they were pretty advanced, and they were settled in the area east of the Tiber River, a est del Tevere, right? And they founded cities like Spoleto, Gubbio, Città di Castello, and the famous Assisi. Those were all built by the Umbri, okay? On the west side of the Tiber River, there were the rivals, the Etruscans, of course, here in Tuscany, right, and Lazio. And the Etruscans founded cities like Perugia and Orvieto. So Umbri and the Etruscans, guess what? They fought for a while because we are Italians. We always fight with each other. But then the Roman Empire, you know, like the Romans invaded everything. So they decided to ally to sort of keep the Romans at bay. They couldn't. So eventually the Romans won. But still, the current region of Umbria became part of the Roman Empire. But then the Roman Empire, you know, sort of declined. So the barbarians arrived, and this area was really, really poor, and, you know, famine and diseases like pandemics. There was everything in Umbria, everything terrible that could happen did happen. But then around the 13th century, it became part of the Papal Empire. So the Pope was ruling. And, well, it started flourishing, and it became a center of art and culture. Then there was, you know, a quick parenthesis right after the French Revolution, where it went under the French, then the Lombards, then the Pope again. And finally, 1861, it became part of Italy. Wow. Okay, I made it. I know that history is boring, but when we have, you know, such a long history, and you visit those cities, and you don't know how that is even possible, that you walk the streets of Perugia, for example, and then you see some stairs going down, and it's just, you know, like a subway stop, but it's actually going down to a parking lot, and you find yourself in this old underground city. You need to know why. I mean, when I tell you about all these people in the Umbria and the Etruscan and this and this and that, and like, you know, layer after layer, they built their civilization layer on top of another layer, and you can still see those. So that's why I always talk about history. Thank you for bearing with me.
We love it when you talk about the history, Veta, because we barely know our own history, which is quite short, most of us, unless you're from Great Britain. That's pretty long history. But we love learning about the history of Italy. And it's very, very, it makes, for those of us who are interested in whatever region we happen to be talking about, it makes us understand the region better. So it's all good. Don't hold back on sharing the history with us.
Okay, thank you. But to make up for, you know, kind of boring part, let me tell you a few fun facts about the region of Umbria. So Perugia hosts the annual Umbria Jazz Festival. Jazz Festival, that's how we say it, okay? So Umbria Jazz Festival, and it's so famous. I mean, it's for jazz music, of course, and it attracts people from all over the world. It's so famous, so beautiful. So if you like jazz, every summer in Perugia, you have this festival. Or if you like music in general and opera in particular, you can go to Spoleto and visit the festival. Sorry, not visit, but be there for the Festival dei Due Mondi. Okay, so it's the Two Worlds Festival. It's a music and opera festival, and it's called Due Mondi because when it was first started, so the first editions in the 50s were to, you know, put together the American and European culture. Okay, so this is now it spread, so you have musicians from all over the world. And this is just so beautiful. I think you can even watch this live on TV because it's such a big event. So if you're a music or opera expert, you should know about this. And speaking of festival, this is my favorite. Perugia is famous for chocolate. So there's another festival in Perugia every year. Euro Chocolate, that's how we call it. Because in Perugia, well, of course, there are a lot of chocolate factory, but the most famous one is Perugina. So those chocolate are tiny, tiny chocolate with like an almond or something inside. And they're so special because they come, they're like kisses. That's what they're called, baci Perugina. And they're wrapped in this silver paper. And then you have a little, you know, note inside, like a fortune cookie with a quote. And it's usually very romantic, and they're very famous, you know, especially for San Valentino. So for St. Valentine's Day, you get Baci Perugina, and they're just famous. Okay, so that's where they're made. They're called Perugina, the factory, because it's in Perugia, obviously. Oh, and speaking of St. Valentine, so St. Valentine's Day, well, in Italian, it's called San Valentino. And, well, he was a saint, of course, from Terni. In Umbria, and legend says that he saw two lovers fighting and he felt bad for them, so he gave them a rose to reconcile them. So they made up, and St. Valentine's is now considered, you know, love saint, and that's why we eat Baci Perugina. So if you celebrate St. Valentine's, that's thanks to Umbria, all of it. And for next St. Valentine's Day, which is in about a month, you could take Alessandro to a good restaurant in Umbria, because now I'm going to talk about food and wine, and I'm sure you're going to book a table right now. So Umbria is famous for olive oil, of course, and then other IGP products are spelt from Monteleone, prosciutto di Norcia, lentils, and potatoes. Now, prosciutto di Norcia, we have a special word in Italian for a special art, which is the art of making salami, making cured meat. And this art is called norcineria, from the town of Norcia in Umbria. So that's how good they are all over Italy. I mean, they gave a name to the art of making salami and prosciutto and so on. So yeah, you should go there. And wines, even if they're not as famous as Tuscan wines, oh, they're great. they have like this, for example, of course, there's many more, but this red that I loved called Montefalco. And they also have whites like Orvieto, like the town, or Alerona, also good. And truffle is a big deal. So if you go to Umbria in the right time of the year, you get truffle on anything, okay, and everything. And then a few dishes that are typical are a sort of fried pizza pocket. So it's like pizza dough closed, filled inside. It's called arvortolo, and it could be savory or sweet, but it's usually savory. Very good. And it's fried. Can you believe how good that is? Deep fried. And then there's torta al testa, which is a sort of focaccia bread or a thick piadina. So it's a kind of bread they make here. And then ciccotto. Ciccotto is a special kind of porchetta. So it's very similar to porchetta. For those of you who don't know, porchetta is like a big pork meat. I'm moving my hands and Nathan is looking at me like, what is she doing? Because it's round, okay? And it's sliced up for you, but pretty thick. And you put it in your panino and you eat it. It's very typical of Lazio and central Italy in general. But most importantly, in Umbria, they have the best fresh pasta, and they make those different kinds of pasta that you don't find anywhere else, like strangozzi or umbricelli. They're like big spaghetti with no eggs. So it's just flour and water, and then you can have any kind of sauce on it. So this is also good for vegans, okay? Of course, you have to choose the right sauce and toppings, but still, this pasta, no eggs. So yeah, ooh, and cheese, of course, pecorino cheese, so good there, and honey. So all those typical things of central Italy, but oh yeah, wow. I think I'm asking Luca to take me to Umbria for dinner on Tuesday as soon as I'm done with my translation. Now, Umbria is a very small region, right? And it's the green heart of Italy, so it's not very populated. So I don't have many singers or many movie actors from there, but I do have a famous singer. He's pretty young. His name is Michele Bravi, like Bravi, okay? Michele Bravi. He won X Factor, the X Factor, Italian X Factor TV show, and went to the Sanremo Music Festival last year with the song Inverno dei Fiori. Inverno dei Fiori. But anything from him, Michele Bravi. He's from Umbria, from Città di Castello, if I remember correctly. So you should listen to Inverno dei Fiori, so Flower Winter. And as for movies, now, the funny thing is that you've seen Umbria several times, okay? You just don't know it because maybe they tell you the movie is set in Tuscany, but it's easier to actually shoot it in Umbria, at least part of it, because it's very similar, less crowded, less, you know, tourists try to get on set and see what's going on. So basically, you've seen Umbria. Mm-hmm. You just don't know it's Umbria. So I don't have a movie for you, but I do have not one, but two TV series, Italian TV series that are like iconic. You can find them on RaiPlay, but probably even on YouTube. So one is Carabinieri. So our police, you know, one of our police forces, the Carabinieri. It's set in Città della Pieve, the first few seasons, then I think they moved to another town, probably Città di Castello again. Anyway, it's like an Italian TV series. You have this beautiful carabiniere, and you have all the things happening, but also a little bit of mystery there because, of course, they are doing their work, doing their job. So, you know, but it happens in Città della Pieve. You can see Città della Pieve, which is a beautiful hamlet in Umbria. And every time they drive around, that's Umbria. And the second one is Don Matteo. Don Matteo is another TV series. Now, Don is used in Italian for priests. So Don Matteo is a priest, and in a town, it was set in, it's set in Gubbio, Foligno, and Spoleto, okay? And you can actually see the town every time he walks. That's the real town of Gubbio, I guess. But then they moved it to Spoleto. I don't know, because it's a lot of series. But that is Umbria. And even most of the actors, the background actors, are from Umbria. So you can even hear the accent there. So I don't know, but I'm pretty sure. Do you know Don Matteo, Nathan?
I do.
You like it? Yeah.
I like how wholesome and cheesy it is. That's classic Italian TV right there. It goes back to something I talked about in one of my recent interviews, I think with Jen. We were talking about how Italy is kind of like 40 or 50 years behind the United States in a lot of ways. And it feels like the kind of TV shows that used to be made in like the 80s in the United States.
Just you mean Don Matteo?
Don Matteo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of other Italian TV shows that I've seen. They're just like, you know, that grandmas watch them every day, you know, and they just, they have to sit down at their, at the same time every day to watch Don Matteo. And I don't know, they're just wholesome and they're delightful. I like that. So anybody who moves here or spends any time here and is smart enough to sign up for Italian television, that's something that you'll be treated to. So yeah, check it out for sure. Well, thank you, Veta, for sharing all of that fantastic information about the region of Umbria. So our surrounding sounds for today are from the region of Umbria. And of course, our guest today was Lanielle, and she talked to us about this home and the process of finding it and setting their house up. And so we have a collection of sounds from Lanielle from this region. So we have sounds of some bells that Lanielle shared with us from her trip to Italy when they were purchasing their home. We also have the sound of some birds as she's taking this beautiful picture looking out over the view from their house, the birds. You can hear some dogs in the background, basically just some village sounds. And then we have the sound of the family at a restaurant, and you can hear the waitress talking about the things that are on the menu and them, some of the kids, I think, talking and asking questions. And so some restaurant sounds. And then there's a sound of Lanielle doing sort of an unboxing and talking about some of the bedding that she purchased for their house. And when she had mentioned about setting up the mattresses and the beds and everything. So we've got kind of a mix of sounds today from Lanielle's time here in Italy. So enjoy those. And Veta and I will be back afterwards to say goodbye.
Something I've always tried to find in the United States, you know, but it's impossible. or very difficult or costly. So these are our sheets, some blue, and we just picked what was on the shelves. You know, there wasn't a huge selection. More could have been ordered, but we didn't really have the time. So these kind of look great in the video, but they're just blue and white striped. Another blue sheet. And then we picked just a white linen cover because honestly, I haven't picked colors for the bedrooms yet. So I just went with white to be safe because it'll probably go with whatever I do in the future. And then for our son, he picked out this. And just kind of liked some tan sheets with like little planes accent sheet. He really loved that. And then just kind of this light creamy tan colored bedspread. And then for our little lady, this is what they had there. And she loves little butterflies and like this little kind of pastel pinks and blues. And then the bedspread that she picked out was this white, and it's a very light pink. You can't really tell. It almost looks tan in the video. I'm not sure what you guys see, but yeah. They're all so lovely, so beautiful. We didn't get anything for our youngest one because right now she's just sleeping with us. We'll get her for something someday. Yeah, it was very, just a fun experience to go in and buy these. We also got some towels and stuff too. So if anybody's interested, let me know and I'll share the store that we went to. All right, bye-bye.
Ah, the surrounding sounds of Umbria. I love it. And I look forward to getting to spend more time there in the future. Maybe even with you, Vet. I will have to go to Assisi together. I've never been to Assisi before.
Oh, it's beautiful. You have to go. We have to go together.
We do. We're going to be zigzagging across Italy, aren't we?
Oh, yes, we are.
As soon as you get done with this translation, though. Well, thank you again, Veta, for sharing this wonderful student and our guest today, and for recommending her to be on the show. Lanielle, I want to thank you for taking the time to be so vulnerable and share so honestly and openly with us about your life, your joys, the struggles, the challenges, about the process of making your dream of living in Italy come true. And I want to thank all of you for taking the time to come back and share another episode with Veta and I. And Veta, of course, thank you to you for sharing all the fantastic information with us today about the region of Umbria.
Thank you. And I can wait to be here again next week for another region here in Italy. Ciao, ciao.
Wherever you are listening to the sound of our voices today, we hope you are healthy and well, and we look forward to being back here with you next week for another episode. So until then, take care, God bless, ciao, ciao, ciao.